Hey, this is more than a philosophical question. Eric Zorn, let me just start with you on this. It's not why I asked you to join us today. Eric Zorn, the previous Chicago Tribune columnist, now the editor-in-chief of and entire staff of the Picayune Sentinel, a newsletter, a blog that he posts every week. What's the drop date? Wednesdays, Eric?
Thursday mornings, John.
Thursday mornings. Wednesday, we do our Mincing Rascals podcast, and Thursdays, the Picayune Sentinel drops. You can subscribe to it just by going to ericzorn@gmail.com. I wonder if all of the people that generate our ire, tick us off, who are these politicians, I wonder if they're good, upstanding citizens who want to do good, and they only become that way over time, given the power and money that floats through their hands. Or if the business of being a Chicago City Alderman and a state senator, I wonder if that just attracts people who are ethically challenged. I wonder which is, or maybe, Eric, maybe it's this. Maybe I'm overstating the case, that it's not as bad as it seems. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that certainly, you know, power tends to corrupt. I'm not the first person to make that observation. I don't think that, I mean, I think, first of all, it requires a certain level of ego / narcissism to get into electoral politics in the first place. I think, like, you should give me your money so that I can have power. I sort of imagine that that statement that coming from someone, and you think, like, well, who do you think you are? And you know, these people tend to think that they are better and smarter and more than, therefore, more deserving than the rest of us. This isn't, of course, universally true. Obviously, I don't even think the majority of it's true. But you get people who, when they get into power, they believe that the world kind of revolves around them and that they deserve more than other people. And they deserve to use this power to enrich themselves and their friends. So I think it is sort of a corrupting system in a way. I mean, it's the best system we have, but it does feel like it does seem to attract a lot of people who end up in trouble. How many aldermen have we put in prison anyway? It's like, is it 50 yet?
I think it's a million.
If only Heather Sharon were here, she would tell us. She would know.
I know one of the topics that's on your mind is Jason Van Dyke. Why are you thinking about the former Chicago police officer this week?
Well, he is going to be released from prison on February 3rd, after spending a little more than 3 years behind bars for the murder of Laquan McDonald back in 2014. And the reason that he's on my mind is I feel that his sentence was wrongly low. It was the judge who sentenced him used the wrong interpretation of the law to give him a lesser sentence than he deserved. And if you look at Illinois Supreme Court precedent, you'll see that that's, in fact, the case. But what happened was, in this case, that the judge chose to sentence Van Dyke on second-degree murder charges and not the aggravated battery with a firearm. He was convicted of both. He was convicted of second-degree murder and aggravated battery with a firearm. And it turns out that aggravated battery with a firearm is a more serious sentence under sentencing laws than second-degree murder. And the reason for that is that second-degree murder covers a very wide range of circumstances, so that you want to give judges the maximum flexibility when they're sentencing for second-degree murder. And the legislature felt that aggravated battery with a firearm is more obviously serious, and it carries a mandatory sentence of 6 to 30 years. And he was convicted on 16 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm. And nobody thought he was going to go to prison for life. But they thought that he was going to get, I think the prosecutor in the case asked for, I believe, 18 years. And so the judge sentenced him on the technically lesser charge. And they went to the Illinois Supreme Court, the Attorney General Kwame Raoul, and made the perfectly plausible argument that this case needed to be resentenced. And the Illinois Supreme Court ignored him. They said, we're not going to do that. So Van Dyke is getting out after 3 years, after pumping 16 shots into Laquan McDonald. And the activists who are protesting have a very good point, in my view, that this sentence is too low and that it's something for people to be angry about.
Yeah, it's not 4 years. It's about 3 years and five months, right? Something like that. Half of 81, right?
Well, let's see. He was convicted in October of 2019, and then he was sentenced shortly after that. And he's getting out, it's just a little more than 3 years later. So, yeah. Technically he was sentenced to 6 years, but those sentences are always cut in half for, quote unquote, good time. So he's going to be free. And I guess you could argue that his life has been kind of ruined by this, that he's not going to be able to work as a police officer again. And his name, everywhere he goes, will be recognized and people will be angry with him and so on. But Laquan McDonald is dead, and we don't just say, well, because you've been chained and you've had a terrible thing happen to you, that you therefore we don't have to put you in prison as long as you deserve. So there are activists who are calling for the CTA to have a 16-day strike over this, where they're going to they want to shut down the buses and trains in the city for 16 days in memory of the 16 shots that he fired into Laquan McDonald. And I think that's a really lousy idea to do that, because so many people do rely on the CTA to get to work. People who are in, disadvantaged communities as well as advantaged communities. And I think that bringing the city to a halt, if that were to happen, would be a really bad idea. There is another request that they want the U.S. attorney to go after the case, that there is a plausible idea that U.S. Attorney Losh could go after Van Dyke on civil rights charges. If you remember, that's how they got the cops who beat up Rodney King. That those guys were tried and acquitted in Simi Valley for that beating, and then the U.S. attorney out there charged them with civil rights violations and put them in prison for that. So that could happen here. Again, the fact that he wasn't acquitted, that he was convicted, it makes me feel a little uneasy to put somebody on trial after they've been convicted once for the same set.
Yeah, it does feel like double jeopardy, And
it really does.
There are times where police officers make a mistake, and I have some sympathy for them. And those are people that get up every day, shine their shoes, and go to work, running towards the gunfire. And sometimes they make tragic mistakes and they have to pay a price for that. And you might argue, well, too often they don't pay a sufficient price for that. And this is a case in point. But there are other instances where I think they made a mistake, they need to pay a price, but it was a mistake they made. In the case of Laquan McDonald, he was walking away. He emptied his gun into that kid. And then they lied about it, he and the other officers there. So I don't think this is one that is very easy to explain away. Like, well, that's a guy who's trying to make our streets safer and he made a miscalculation. That just was brutal and wrong. And
no, I totally agree with you, John. I think that there are a lot of these cases that are really unfortunate. They are mistakes. I think we look at the Adam Toledo case, which was a year ago.
Completely agree. April, completely
which,
agree.
Which is a horrible thing. A child was killed, but the police officer has not been charged, and he has not been fired. And I think the reason is because people realize that it was a terrible mistake that he made. But it was a mistake, and he was out there in the middle of the night trying to deal with people firing off guns in a dangerous neighborhood. And so, you have to take that into account. The Laquan McDonald case is pretty egregious in terms of what the conduct was. And again, you're right. Laquan McDonald had been burglarizing vehicles and he had a knife in his hand, but he was walking away from the office.
Had a lot of time to make that decision. In the Toledo case, it was not a full second. Was it a full second, the amount of time that Adam Toledo turned his right hand around in front of him and the officer has to decide if that's a gun or not? And is that gun pointed at me and do I need to fire in self-defense? That's a completely different scenario. It's 11:44. The Picayune Sentinel's Eric Zorn is on the phone line. Sometimes you read him in the Daily Herald, too. There's a couple of other things I want to talk to you about, Eric. Of course, one of them is human composting. And the other one would be robot baseball umpires. Eric, let's talk not a lot about human composting. Why is that on your mind today?
It's on my mind. Chicago Democratic State Rep Kelly Cassidy recently introduced a bill in the House to change state regulations on the burial laws and cremation laws that allows you to use what's called natural organic reduction, which is the accelerated conversion of human remains into soil or compost. And it's the same process that's used for disposing of livestock when a body is placed in a reusable container along with a bunch of organic material. It's heated, it's rotated, and then in the case of human beings, in about a month, everything in there is turned into about two wheelbarrows worth of odorless and nutrient-rich soil that people say is unrecognizable visually, chemical, microbiologically as human remains. It's useful in a garden or anywhere else you might want to put it. It's legal now in three states, Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. And it's something that really appeals to me. It does, because it's like, when you die to be cremated, okay, you become ashes and people can scatter your ashes places, but the ashes are really not useful. And when you're pumped filled with formaldehyde and planted in the ground, you just basically become a little miniature toxic waste site for the rest of eternity. I really like the idea of returning one's corporeal being back to nature. You know, to as I put it in the piece I wrote, you'd be literally pushing up daisies.
If that was a member of my family, would I then get their remains? Would I be able to fold them into our garden in the backyard or something?
Yes, you would. Yes, I mean, if you were in Oregon or Colorado or Washington, you could.
I don't know if I want to do that, but I don't know why the state would not want to allow me to do it. If I want to do it and somebody's willing to provide that service, what business is it of theirs?
Well, that's exactly right. It is certainly chemically safe. It's environmentally the most sound way of disposing of remains that you can imagine. And the objections have tended to come from the Catholic Church, which thinks that the human body needs to be treated with more dignity and respect than that.
Seriously? Really?
I'm perfectly fine with however people want to consider the human remains, and I would be right with them if this were a mandatory thing, like you had to be composted. But this ought to be an option that people who like the idea, like I do, that you could go on and repay the earth in some way by giving back to it, by becoming part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's part of the green burial movement in general, where you don't use formaldehyde, you're allowed to have a smaller carbon footprint for your own demise.
This text is just poured in. It says gangsters have been doing this for years. So fair enough.
Fish food, right?
I'm on board, Eric. I never thought about it. I'm persuaded by what you've just said. I know Brenda and I talk about it a little bit every now and then. It comes up for some reason. I say, I don't want a big fancy coffin. I don't want a big fancy funeral. I want to donate my body to science. I wouldn't mind donating it to the backyard. Let's talk about robots in baseball. Major League Baseball will this year at AAA in some of the leagues, in one of the leagues, for many of the teams, they will have robots calling balls and strikes. And they're not saying that they won't do it at the major league level sometime in the near future. What do you think about that?
I am really in favor of this, John. I think that I love replay. The only thing I don't like about replay in sports is the time that it takes. And I think it's an absurd amount of time. It's almost like replay theater in baseball where the umpires all march over to the dugout and put on the headsets. That's nonsense. It should take them. I mean, by that time, everybody who's watching TV knows what the proper call is, and that's an argument for not having the replay that they have now. But robot balls and strikes, as they call it, or automatic computer balls and strikes, would be instantaneous. It would be the pitcher would come in, there would be a signal that would be sent right to the umpire, and he or she probably would call the pitch right away. So, and I've seen research that shows that about one in every 20 pitches is missed by professional umpires now. That you're talking about 12 missed ball and strike calls per game. And that's significant.
What will it be with the computer? What would it be with the robot?
It would be as close to zero as you could make.
How can they look? So what is the strike zone? Where is it?
Well, I guess what is it defined as now, between the armpits and the top of the knees or something like that?
What if I crouch over, though, a little bit? Has the strike zone moved then? Is it determined by my natural height or by my batting stance?
I would guess that what they would do, and I don't know, I haven't followed all the ins and outs, it's a good question, but they probably would measure every player's natural batting stance at the beginning of the season. You'd stand there and they would take the measurements and then they would put those into the system. And so if you wanted to fake it and crouch over for that, then you would have to have that stance, or it would be called.
So, like,
on
the way
you.
Pete Some... Rose used to bat. Boy, I hate to go back that far, but he was famously crouched over and shrunk his strike zone. Not because he was trying to minimize the strikes, but I think that's just the way he hit the ball naturally. But it just seems to me like there are so many variables about where the strike zone is. First of all, I don't like turning the game over to machines. 815 just texted in to say, I'd like to see the players argue with the robot. I think that the human element of the umpire is part of the game, not because I want him to get it wrong, but because I think there are variables. They're nuanced. It's not all black and white, particularly in baseball, and sometimes you need a human being to make the decision. What do you think of that?
I don't like it because you can make the same argument about in tennis. I think tennis has been definitely improved by the Hawkeye system that calls balls in and out.
I don't mind it in tennis.
And I like it in football as well, with things like whether someone has crossed the goal line, the replay that they have. I think that anytime you could remove error from the game, I mean, you want a strike to be a strike.
Okay,
you want
let's
it to
talk
be
about a, football for a second. So in football, here's a pet peeve of mine. I think that they are taking away a lot of receptions from wide receivers because they say they didn't control it. They didn't make a football move, or they didn't have it for sufficient steps. I understand inbounds and out of bounds, but there are times where I think that guy caught the ball. And now it juggled out, or they knocked it out. But aren't there times where, if it were up to you, you would decide that that was a reception?
Yeah, although when they look at those replays, they try to impose consistent standards from a number of different angles on the camera. And so when you have a system that takes a look at every angle and really figures out whether it's happened or not, whether the catch has been made, whether the control has happened, and so on. But these plays happen, you know, bang, bang. You look at them in real time. It's amazing that they get as many calls right as they do. But, you know, the whole thing about sports is the idea of a level playing field, of fairness. That sports without fairness becomes too arbitrary. You really want as much as possible to have. I mean, that's why they switch ends in basketball and they switch ends in football. The field's not slanted. They use the same, that they make sure that the balls that they're using in each.
All right,
stadium.
I'm out of time.
We'll have to continue this.
Yeah, I don't think either of us will be persuaded. It's Eric Zorn. He writes in the Picayune Sentinel, and you can subscribe to it free, or you can pay for it, right? You can read it for free too, can't you, Eric?
You can read it for free, yeah.
The Picayune Sentinel. You can find it by simply emailing ericzorn@gmail.com or Google Picayune Sentinel. I'll talk to you again, sir. Thank you.